Harper Audio presents 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works. A True Story by Dan Harris. This is the author. We are in the midst of a momentous event in the evolution of human consciousness, but they won't be talking about it in the news tonight. Eckhart Tolle, self-help guru. Open up your mind, in pours the trash. Meat Puppets, desert punk band. Author's note. Conveniently for me, most of the events described in this book were recorded either by television cameras or the Voice Memos app on my iPhone. When conversations were not recorded, I reproduced the quotes from memory and, in most cases, ran them by the participants. In some places, I cleaned up the dialogue, excising ums and ahs, etc., to make it more readable or to make myself look smarter. Preface. I initially wanted to call this book The Voice in My Head is an Asshole. However, that title was deemed inappropriate for a man whose day job requires him to abide by FCC decency standards. It's true, though, the voice in my head can be a total pill. I'd venture to guess yours can, too. Most of us are so entranced by the nonstop conversation we're having with ourselves that we aren't even aware we have a voice in our head. I certainly wasn't, at least not before I embarked on the weird little odyssey described in this book. To be clear, I'm not talking about hearing voices. I'm talking about the internal narrator, the most intimate part of our lives. The voice comes braying in as soon as we open our eyes in the morning and then heckles us all day long with an air horn. It's a fever swamp of urges, desires, and judgments. It's fixated on the past and the future to the detriment of the here and now. It's what has us reaching into the fridge when we're not hungry, losing our temper when we know it's not really in our best interest, and pruning our inboxes when we're ostensibly engaged in conversation with other human beings. Our internal chatter isn't all bad, of course. Sometimes it's creative, generous, or funny. But if we don't pay close attention, which very few of us are taught how to do, it can be a malevolent puppeteer. If you told me when I first arrived in New York City to start working in network news that I'd be using meditation to defang the voice in my head, or that I'd ever write a whole book about it, I would have laughed at you. Until recently, I thought of meditation as the exclusive province of bearded swamis, unwashed hippies, and fans of John Tesh music. Moreover, since I have the attention span of a 6-month-old yellow lab, I figured it was something I could never do anyway. I assumed, given the constant looping, buzzing, and fizzing of my thoughts, that clearing my mind wasn't an option. But then came a strange and unplanned series of events involving war zones, megachurches, self-help gurus, Paris Hilton, the Dalai Lama, and 10 days of silence that in a flash went from the most annoying to the most profound experience of my life. As a result of all this, I came to realize that my preconceptions about meditation were in fact misconceptions. Meditation suffers from a towering PR problem, largely because its most prominent proponents talk as if they have a perpetual pan flute accompaniment. If you can get past the cultural baggage, though, what you'll find is that meditation is simply exercise for your brain. It's a proven technique for preventing the voice in your head from leading you around by the nose. To be clear, it's not a miracle cure. It won't make you taller or better looking, nor will it magically solve all of your problems. You should disregard the fancy books and famous gurus promising immediate enlightenment. In my experience, meditation makes you 10% happier. That's an absurdly unscientific estimate, of course, but still, not a bad return on investment. Once you get the hang of it, the practice can create just enough space in your head.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?